You're listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with computer scientist Stephen Wolfram, founder and CEO of Wolfram Research, the creator of Mathematica, and Wolfram Alpha. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
I don't know. I have grown up in the kind of Western scientific tradition, so to speak. And what's interesting to see is that some of the things that the questions that we get to ask now that have grown out of the Western scientific tradition are things that have been also asked in quite different traditions. And so a thing that I didn't think we would ever have anything scientific to say about is a question like, why does the universe exist? But that's something that now we can make some scientific statements about that. And those statements have a lot of resonance, I think, with things that people have come to from very different kinds of ways of thinking about the world. It's interesting that when you describe, the convergence of science and other kinds of things. I know when I was a kid, people would talk about, at a religious level, they would talk about souls and so on. And one would say, that just can't be anything scientific. How much does a soul weigh? Anything that exists must have a weight. That sounded reasonable from the point of view of the narrow way of thinking about science at the time. Now that we understand this idea of computation, we understand that there can be a thing that is real and meaningful, but it doesn't have a weight. It is a merely abstract thing, a computational thing. And when we think about souls, that's, I think, the idea that one is going for is this computational representation, this computational engram of what's in a brain, for example. And we now have a much better understanding of what that sort of engram, what that abstract, it has no physical weight or anything like that. It's just an abstract thing that can be rendered in a brain. So that's an example. But I think it's interesting to me that there are things that people have an intuitive sense of and have for a long time, that sometimes in science, there's been a tendency to say, no, we have a particular way of thinking about things in science, and that doesn't fit with it, so let's lock it out, so to speak. So an example of that, for example, animism, you mentioned this question of where are their minds? Is it reasonable to think of the weather as having a mind of its own? Is it reasonable to think of the forest as having a mind, so to speak? In these kind of computational terms, yes, it does become reasonable to think about those things. Now, if you say, and it's then one comes to that idea from a place of sort of a formalized science, but nevertheless, it relates to intuitions that people have had for a long time that didn't come from that particular kind of branch of formalized thinking. Another example of this has happened with biological evolution, the question of the origin of species. How did we get all the critters that we see on the earth, so to speak? And there have been a kind of the critters of the earth are the way they are because God just built them that way and there's nothing more to say about it. And then the sort of shocker of Darwinian evolution of no, actually, there is a kind of progression of building these species determined by this process of natural selection. Then what happened is people said that's the scientific view of how species get constructed and so on. It's all natural selection. And any other way of thinking about it just has to be something that should be locked out of the science. But turns out, something I've recently been studying, I was surprised to realize that some things I'd looked at many years ago but hadn't pushed hard enough, we could now, using intuition from machine learning, using sort of intuition from the physics project that we've done and from the study in the computational universe, we realize that we can push further on this and to discover that in this sort of process of biological evolution, the emergence of all the critters of the earth, so to speak, that there's actually a bit more going on. There's natural selection is one piece of the story, but there's some significant other parts to the story that have to do with the way computation operates and the inexorable processes of computation that one might have been thrown out because one's got the idea science is purely about natural selection and nothing more, so to speak. That's a case where, in a sense, things defeat themselves by being too, we think we understand what science is, so then let's go only in that direction. I think one very big example of that is this phenomenon of computational irreducibility, this idea that even though you know the rules by which something operates, that doesn't immediately tell you everything about what the system will do. You might have to follow a billion steps in the actual operation of those rules to find out what the system does. There's no way to jump ahead and just say, and the answer will be such and such. computational irreducibility is, in a sense, goes against the hope, at least, of, for example, mathematical science. A lot of the hope of mathematical science is, we'll just work out a formula for how something is going to operate. We don't have to go through the steps and watch it operate. We can just jump to the end and apply the formula. Computational irreducibility says that isn't something you can generally do. It says that there are plenty of things in the world which are where you have to go through the steps to see what will happen. In a sense, even though that's a bad thing for science, it says that there's limitations on the extent to which we can use science to predict things. It's a good thing, I think, for leading one's life, because it means that as we experience the passage of time, in a sense, that corresponds to the sort of irreducible computation of what we will do. It's something where that tells one that the passage of time has a meaningful effect. There's something that where you can't just jump to the end and say, I don't need to live all the years of my life. I can just go and say, and the result will be such and such. No, actually, there's something irreducible about that actual progression of time and the actual living of those years of life, so to speak. So that's kind of one of the sort of an enriching aspect of this concept of computational irreducibility. It's a pretty important concept. It's something which I think, for example, in the future of human society, will be something where people right now will think of it as this kind of geeky scientific idea, but in the future, it's going to be a pivotal thing for the understanding of how one should conduct the future of human society, because the real issue has to do with, for example, when we build automated systems, AIs and so on, we have a choice. We can either let them do computationally irreducible things, which means they'll actually achieve something by the progress of their computations, or we can say, no, we want to constrain them so that they'll only do things which are computationally reducible, where we can work out what the result will be without actually for having it follow all those steps. If we say we only want the AIs to do things where we can readily foresee what they will do and make sure that those are things we want them to do, then we're preventing them from having computational irreducibility. We're preventing them from actually doing the things that they can do as computational systems. So the big choice is, do we let the things do the things they can do as computational systems and automate as richly as possible? Or do we say, no, we want to constrain them to only do things that we can foresee? So when we have this situation where they are doing computationally irreducible things, they will occasionally surprise us. They will do things where we did not foresee that would happen. And we have to decide, is that okay? Or do we say, no, we have to be able to predict everything? Do we have this completely controlled society where we can predict everything, but where a lot of richness can't happen? Or do we have something where there is a certain sense in which we can't predict what's going to happen, but nevertheless, many rich things can happen and we can make use of kind of the computational depth of what those systems can do.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.